Jinx is molesting my leg over here.
Well, that's not weird to say at all.
I'm just letting you know. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Blair.
And I'm Kirsten, and we are Mediocre Content. A small announcement, if I may, just very quickly. I know my mic is very quiet in like random episodes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was like, where is she going with this? What's happening?
I'm very much aware. We're trying to figure it out. Apologies. Hopefully this one's better. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
I think you should get the $20 microphone from Amazon and have no problems. I feel like
everyone...
What just happened?
A microphone out.
Oh my god. It just like beeped really loud and then it was like done.
Oh, can you not hear me now?
I can hear you now, but it definitely cut out for a few minutes.
I'm telling you. My computer has been rejecting all of my stuff. So I just got a pop-up that said that it didn't like my headphones, it didn't like my microphone, and it didn't like my camera, and now I'm back.
Great.
Woo!
Great.
This is not gonna be a problem, right? You know what I really think it is?
What?
I think it's because Lynx puts his little furry booty between the wall and my computer. And I think he wiggle jiggles the little cords. And I think if I were to go back there, some of them are loose. But to get back there, I would have to be a little furry cat boy to go back there and fix it.
It all goes back to cat butts.
It really does. It's all about cat butts.
I also think that, you know, maybe it's time for Lynx to get a job.
And maybe agreed.
We should teach him how to fix the computer so that way we can record our podcast without having any problems.
Better yet, just don't freaking mess with the computer at all, son.
Also possible. But is that likely? No.
No. If he's going to be back there, he might as well be productive. That's true.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. That's true. Hopefully this little blip did not make me quieter, however, after I just said it.
Yeah. I don't know.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. Yes, we will.
Anyway.
Yes, we will. All right. We hope everybody had a good week. This is the intermittent time between Thanksgiving and Christmas that everyone's kind of like, what's going on? We're so busy with all of our things and buying presents and doing the things and
true,
you know.
Well, have you finished your shopping though?
Oh girl, no.
Right?
Are you kidding me?
Right.
Please. I'm also trying to figure out how I'm going to ship everything to all of my people without spending a small fortune.
I was just thinking that this past week. You have a much further distance to go than I do.
Well, yes. Thank God for the US postal system, however, because they rake flat rate boxes and I think that will be the best thing for me, but we'll see.
Absolutely.
We'll see. But yes, just remember to take time for yourself and breathe during this somewhat tumultuous time in terms of the holidays, because it's not great for everyone and it's very stressful for most. So
indeed.
All right. Before we get started, let's talk about how we're not experts on anything. And if you have come to the podcast to get any kind of advice, we are not the place to get that information at all. We are the place to learn about things that have not crossed your typical algorithm for you page, what have you. So, yeah, just bear with us. Also, this is kind of scary for the Christmas season, in my opinion. I'm sure indeed. Kirsten will lighten it up for us as she does.
Of course, I try.
But yeah, so just keep that in mind as well. If you're looking for like a cozy little Christmas podcast, this is it.
Oh,
not what we're doing today.
This is perfect. But you have the good news this week as well.
Yes. Yes, I do. So you're going to hear me yak for a few more, for a few more.
Please yap. Please don't yak.
You're right. I meant to say yap. You're right.
I mean, you can yak. It's not going to affect me at all.
I absolutely will not be throwing up. I have a fear of that. Anyway.
Thank goodness.
All right. So the first one I have titled Cool Roads.
Heart.
heart. And it's like the cute little text message one. It's not like the emoji
Less
one,
than three.
just so you know. A private public partnership has paved, wow, look at all the P's.
Wow.
The alliteration is amazing. Has paved a section of Minnesota road with an experimental low carbon concrete mixture that resulted in greater strength and lesser cement use, saving money and carbon.
Wow.
Concrete and its most important ingredient, cement, is one of the most carbon intensive industries on the earth because it is used so often in construction. It has virtually no parallels for the ease of use, versatility, and structural properties, but emits about 0.6 tons of carbon per 1 ton of cement mixture produced, according to the Imperial College London.
Goodness.
US firm Carbon Upcycling Technologies, in collaboration with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, MnDOT, has successfully completed a 3-year study on the use of the company's low carbon cement in highways. The results highlight carbon upcycling's ability to be a drop-in solution for reducing carbon-intensive cement and concrete while saving money and making stronger roads. We love. The work in the study was carried out by Sutter Engineering and sponsored by the National Road Research Alliance, which I never knew there was such a thing until now.
Me neither.
It rigorously tested 16 unique concrete mixtures in real-world conditions on an active Minnesota highway to identify options that could reduce the carbon footprint of infrastructure without sacrificing strength or durability. Completed in early 2024, I
I
guess
mean,
that's correct.
technically.
I was going to say 2024, but you know,
Same, same.
the study aimed to find materials that could significantly lower the carbon footprint of concrete paving without compromising durability. Carbon upcycling CO2 enhanced mix achieved 12.5% reduction in cement content while matching the workability of traditional concrete, allowing seamless handling, placement, and setting times for construction crews.
12% is huge.
I know.
I think the usual, like, this is probably good is like a 3% threshold. So that's really good.
Going above and beyond.
For real.
Quote, infrastructure is the very foundation of a sustainable future. And at Carbon Upcycling, we're committed to creating materials that support this vision while establishing a secure, stable North American supply chain, says Apoorv Sinha, CEO of Carbon Upcycling. Quote, our collaboration with the Minnesota Department of Transportation highlights how carbon upcycling has tr can transform captured emissions into local materials that strengthen our infrastructure by focusing on resilience and sustainability. We're contributing to a vision where our essential structures are clean and built to last. Additionally, their mixture increased strength by 28%, measured at 28 days, and 32% stronger at 56 days compared to an advanced control concrete.
That's very impressive.
I know. These findings provide valuable data to guide future low carbon infrastructure projects across North America as the seamless integration into existing workflows. Carbon upcycling, that's so hard to
I
say.
know, right?
Carbon upcycling submitted a very impressive mixture design to the trial, said Larry Sutter, MDOT's principal engineer and the project's technical manager. Their material not only achieved the highest reduction in
That's an interesting word.
cementitious content among all substitutions, but also demonstrated remarkable strength. I guess if you're in the cement business, you use that word a
Yeah,
lot.
I guess so.
By embedding CO2 and reducing the reliance on Portland cement, which is not the city, it's like a type of
Yeah.
cement. Carbon upcycling's technology addresses one of the concrete industry's most pressing challenges, lowering its carbon footprint as global demand for cement is expected to double by 2050. This project data will be invaluable as the industry works toward its 2030 CO2 reduction target.
That's great. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's super handy. And to have those kinds of numbers right off the bat is very impressive.
Indeed. And it seems to get stronger like as the days go on as
Right.
well, which is Cool.
I wonder how quickly after pouring you can drive on it, because I know that like there's certain times for asphalt and cements to
Yeah.
settle. So I wonder if it might even settle easier, which is good because that means when people are driving on it right after it's been poured, it probably won't damage or create structural integrity issues as well.
Yeah. So they made it seem like it wouldn't really be that different than what we have now. So,
And still better.
and still better.
A win is a win.
A win is a win. All right. So this pilot is my favorite pilot, is what I titled the next one.
Okay.
Now, I can't speak for the airline, but I will speak for this particular pilot. Okay. A United Airlines pilot has become a social media sensation after personally overseeing the order and distribution of 30 pizzas to 155 passengers on his flight.
Bro, yes.
Now monikered the Pizza Pilot, Scott Wardell, Wardle, Wardle, Scott Wardle,
Wordle. That's
Squirtle,
that.
after 30 years of piloting for the Air Force and as a civilian, he knows what it feels like to be stuck at the airport and that he just had to do something to show we care. Well, that care took off with posts and photos of Wardle handling. Oh, Jesus Christ. I
I
can't.
believe in
I'm
you.
so sorry. Handing out pizzas using the check-in counter at the gate as a kitchen counter going viral. The story began when Boise-based Wardle was all set for a flight to Phoenix via Houston. But about 45 minutes into the trip, he received a call from the flight crew that a patient had fallen unconscious.
Oh my gosh.
Though there were two nurses and a medic on board, Wardle felt he couldn't take any chances and came in for an emergency landing at Albuquerque at 11 p.m., just as the food court was shutting down. Hoping to get the passage back underway as soon as possible, he suddenly received word that his cabin crew maxed out their hours, of course, meaning that he had to wait for a new set of attendants. Quote, "I
Oof.
made sure to confirm that they were on the way with the company, and then I thought I got to do something with all these people. So I started exploring some options at that point for what I want to do. I came up with the idea of doing pizza for everyone. It's an easy thing, and most people like pizza."
Fair
He's
enough.
not wrong. Wardle says he loves his job, and the only burden he felt during the whole ordeal was compassion and sympathy for his passengers. He picked up the phone and started ordering dozens of pizzas. As he began passing them around with plates and napkins, passengers took notice. The viral photos and videos reached virtually every corner of Wardle's social life, with old Air Force buddies and even his graduation class of 1984, and phoning him to say that they saw him serving pizza in his pilot uniform.
Very fancy.
Quote, "I didn't think it was a big deal. I just did my thing," Wardle said. "Many pilots in our company do this sort of thing. I just happened to get my picture taken."
Oh,
United
he's
Airlines
humble.
insisted on reimbursing him for the pizzas and applauded a hero of the friendly skies who waited until every passenger had a slice in their hands before sitting down himself for a pie.
That is so wholesome and
I
beautiful.
thought so. I thought so.
Aw, people are great.
People are great.
And pizza's great. I would not be
Indeed.
sad about getting a slice of pizza on a flight.
Yeah.
Well, that's brilliant. Well, all of that's wholesome and beautiful, and I'm glad that it is quite joyful because this is not that.
Correct.
We're about to transition
Correct.
to a very less wholesome avenue. Because most of you know who Santa Claus is, most of you know who Father Winter is. Most of you know the old Saint Nick. However, actually, I would say most of you know who Krampus is now. I don't even know why I'm trying to build it up like you
Only
don't know
because,
who he is.
well, like, yeah, so only because of The Office, though, right?
For,
I
well,
feel.
I guess, and TikTok culture, all
Yeah.
of, you know, it's, and the movie that came out. I don't remember when it came out. It came
Oh,
out
there was a
at
movie. You're
some
right.
point. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not see it for obvious reasons, because scary. However, good children, at least the story says, receive gifts, warm surprises because they're on their best behavior all freaking
LOL,
year.
warm surprises. Anyway.
Warm surprise. They pee in bed. I'm just kidding. They need a change of sheets.
Krampus puts their hand in a bucket of warm water.
and suddenly it's a. Anyway, however, In Austria, children spend much of early December awaiting their Saint Nicholas to visit, typically get little treaty treats, which is so fun. But if they should have messed up, instead of just getting a little bit of coal in your stocking, they get a visit from Krampus, which
bum,
bum. It is quite horrifying. This half man, half goat thing is genuinely horrifying.
We're not talking about Mr. Tumnus from
oh no,
from Narnia. It's not quite that.
No, Mr. Tumnus is not scary. Krampus is scary. And we actually did kind of talk about Krampus in our boogeyman episode, because he's technically classified as what's known as a tulpa, or being created out of fear and imaginations of children. That's what the tulpa means. So if you get snubbed by Saint Nick and Krampus comes around to chase the naughty children, he might even drag you to hell, which is just great to get into the Christmas spirit.
I hear it's very warm there.
Oh, quite warm. European versions of Saint Nicholas have long had the scary counterparts, such as Belsnickel and Nietzsche Ruprecht, which again, we've actually talked about in our October episode series, and they will also dole out some punishments. And we'll cover a little bit of that later. Krampus and Saint Nick's other bad boys have their origins in pagan celebrations of the winter solstice. And later they do become part of Christian traditions in which Saint Nicholas visited children to reward them between December 5 and 6th. Around that time, his partner would also visit kids to punish them. So it was kind of like a dual effort, shall we say. In Alpine Austria and some parts of Germany, this day is also known as Krampusnacht or Krampus Night for good reason. And this is when adults might even dress up as Krampus to frighten children at their homes, which is just great, bringing that real fear to life every holiday season. His name does derive from a German word called Krampin, which just means claws. So if you see Krampus, he typically has horns. He kind of looks fluffy, but not like in the cute way. And he has horrible talons on his hands.
Cute.
Yeah.
Like Edward has scissor hands, but not quite.
Correct. Yes. But more fluff.
More fluff.
So children may have also seen Krampus running through the street during Krampus Lauf, also literally translating to Krampus run. And if Krampusnacht was a way to scare kids into behaving themselves, the Krampus Lauf, which isn't technically tied to a specific day, was a way for grown men to blow off steam and scare the children, which I guess is really fun.
Great.
Well, these Austrian men would get drunk and run through the streets dressed as this fearsome creature. So it's really great for them.
That does sound like fun. Oh no, her mic went out. Oh Lord.
I don't know why it's doing that.
Oh, it's back now. It's back now. Okay.
But they do continue to be present today. So if you go during this time frame, that's what they be doing, which is
wonderful.
Super great. Instead of Blair's crappy Wi-Fi, we're going to have to do a Blair or a
Kirsten's
crappy,
crappy microphone.
Look, I don't know why it's doing that now. According to legend, Krampus himself is the son of Hel, which H-E-L, not H-E-L-L, who is a Norse god of the underworld. With the spread of Christianity, he also became associated with Christmas, despite efforts by the Catholic Church to obviously ban that, because they said, no, thank you.
They said, Satan does not go here.
Satan is not involved. Please leave him at the door. And meanwhile, Austria was like, he's coming in. So anyway,
yeah, right.
That's what happened. And of course, like we talked about, he has become sort of a media celebrity, and due to mass visual media, it's kind of very charismatic in a way, apparently. It's just this huge wave of Krampus love and Krampus lore that's just exploded out of the media. When the postcard industry, in fact, experienced a boom in Germany and Austria in the 1890s, it opened the way for Krampus carton to kind of take place. And so now there's Krampus cards.
I wonder how they feel about Halloween, because I feel like
right?
It's just a continuation of Halloween, kind of.
Absolutely. I mean, why would you not? These holiday cards weren't made to feel make you feel warm and fuzzy, though. There is one that's called Gruss vom Krampus, Greetings from Krampus. And on
Cute.
this card, it showed Krampus stuffing a distressed child into his satchel or preparing to hit one with a bundle of birch sticks. Tis the season.
The season. If I ever go to Germany, everyone I know is getting a
Absolute.
Krampus Christmas card.
Required at
Yeah,
that
right.
point. Many of these postcards do depict Krampus going after the children with his sticks, leading them away in chains, or carrying them off in his bag.
Hot.
So,
We love.
so hot.
So hot.
Getting
We
a
love a
little
bad boy.
more. He's such a bad boy. Daddy Krampus. Anyway, getting a little more personal outside of Daddy
Oh,
Krampus.
God.
There were also cards that were a little more adult themed in nature. Krampus cards in the early 20th century do show him punishing children, but they also show him proposing to women, which is not where I thought that conversation was going to go when I looked
So
this
we were on
article up.
track
Oh,
then.
yes,
We sussed it out. We got it. All
absolutely.
right.
You
All
know how
right.
there's like a mask trend right now? It's still true. So, anyway. In some cards, Krampus is portrayed as a large woman whipping tiny men with her birch sticks and carrying them off in her satchel. So that's great. In another one, there's a smiling woman who will dangle a defeated-looking Krampus in the air, holding his bundle of birch sticks behind her back. So you can draw your conclusions on those.
So basically the only thing that can defeat Krampus is moms.
Moms who really need a great Christmas night.
That's right.
A
That's right.
very specific Christmas night. It's
I love it. I love it so much. This is
fine.
wonderful.
It's
This
fine.
is the best lore I've ever heard.
You're
Oh,
welcome.
this is great.
You asked me to keep it light. Anyway, so for over a century, most Americans probably never saw a Krampus card, didn't know who he was, but that changed in 2022. See, I was going to do your 2020 something. 2004,
2004.
2004.
Kirsten, why you gotta hurt my ears? That's so rude.
Genuinely, it just
Oh,
did the thing again.
it
So,
did. Okay. All right.
sorry. I don't
Yeah.
hear the beep when it does it, so that's
I
great for
do.
you.
It's super great. Yeah.
In 2004, there was an art director and a graphic designer, Mont Beauchamp, published a book of Krampus cards and helped organize an art show that was inspired by the cards. Whether or not Beauchamp is primarily responsible for introducing the Krampus cards to the United States, Krampus has since technically been sort of an icon in America as well. Etsy, if you know about Etsy, has a whole section of items, of course, inspired by the classic Krampus cards. And if you don't have time to send cards, you can buy an ugly Krampus sweater to wear at your local Krampus party or Krampus
You
ball.
know what I really think I'm gonna get Philip for Christmas now
Oh
is just like a
dear.
bunch of Krampus stuff.
I feel like that's great.
I
And
feel like he would love that.
if he doesn't appreciate it, then he doesn't understand.
That's true.
Krampus's popularity in the US arguably peaked in 2015, featuring the film Krampus, so that's when it was, which shouldn't be confused with the many other low-budget Krampus movies, which apparently also took place. And although Krampus is relatively new to the US, this Alpine legend is now the original, and I quote from the article, Bad Santa.
Wasn't that a movie?
I believe so.
Okay.
Despite all of this, Krampus is not the only one haunting winter festivals, and like we talked about, some of these creatures have been doing it for even longer. In order, one through six, there is Bellsnickel, Frau Perchta, Mari Lude, Gryla and Lepalotti and their Yule Cat. It's very specific.
Yule Cat.
Yule Cat. La Befana, and then Hans Trapp. And we're going to cover the first three of these during this half, and then we'll talk about the other three in the second half. Because I feel like if you're going to talk about Krampus lore, you might as well talk about all of
That's right.
them. And I do feel like we've talked about some of these before on and off. So I apologize if this is kind of a repeat, but it's always fun to have a little spook. So here you go. Bellsnickel is a crotchety, fur-clad Christmas gift bringer In the folklore of the Palatinate region of southwestern Germany along the Rhine, the Saarland, and the Odenwald area of Baden-Württemberg. Hopefully I said that right.
Bless you.
You're welcome. Yes, thank you. I feel like I picked it up pretty well.
Sorry, oh, yeah, no, you did good.
I don't speak German. The figure is also preserved in Pennsylvania Dutch communities and Brazilian Germany communities randomly. Belsnickel is related to other companions of St. Nicholas in the folklore of German-speaking Europe. He may have been based on an older German myth, Necht Ruprecht, a servant of St. Nicholas and a character from northern Germany. Unlike those figures, though, Belsnickel doesn't actually accompany St. Nicholas, but instead will visit alone and combine both the threatening and benign aspects, which other traditions are divided between the two as companion figures, which is like what Krampus and St. Nick are. When people immigrated to Pennsylvania, which is why it's there, they brought their German traditions with them, which is why it's there. And it was known in Pennsylvania as early as the 1800s-ish. And amongst the Pennsylvania Germans, Belsnickel is the character who visits homes prior to Christmas to check on the behavior of the children.
Ah, so it's like Elf on the Shelf.
Correct. We're looking out for you.
Yeah.
This tradition means that Belsnickel would show up at houses about 1 to 2 weeks before, which is very similar to the Elf on the Shelf. Mm-hmm, and he would, quote, often create fright because he always knew exactly which of the children had misbehaved.
Mm-hmm.
He knows when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake, I guess.
Well, and I feel like mom and dad are a prime informant
for
in
sure.
This particular situation.
Absolutely. As is most of the cases for all the winter traditions.
Mm-hmm.
He would rap on the door or window with his stick, which is dad outside freezing his butt off, rapping the window with a stick. And often the children would, of course, have to answer a question for him or sing some type of song. Right. In exchange, he would toss candies on the floor like a heathen. And then if the children jump too quick for the treats, they may also just get smacked by the sticks, which is great.
That seems good.
You can have them, but not that fast. So that's that. If you want to know what he looks like, he is a man wearing furs because, again, he's very crotchety and fur clad, as we talked about in the beginning. But he also sometimes wears a mask that has a really long tongue. And I don't know if that's suggestive or not, but I think the women who are all about Krampus may be interested in Belsnickel, and I'll leave it at that. He is typically very ragged and disheveled. He wears torn, tattered, dirty clothes, carries, of course, his Switch so he can whack the children and the windows.
Not
and
the Nintendo Switch, just
no,
to be
he doesn't
very
have,
clear.
The Belsnickel has a Switch Lite, actually, and also a pocket full of cakes, candies, and nuts for
as,
the children.
As do I. Am I Belsnickel?
Are you Belsnickel? Whoa.
Oh, God.
Crazy. So anyway, that is number one on our list.
Cool.
Yeah. I also feel like, so this is a great series because while I feel like there are many, shall we say, male entities in a lot of winter festivities, the fun part in winter festivities, there's also some female winter people. And I feel like you don't really hear, outside of gods and goddesses, I feel like you don't really hear a lot about a lore with other womanly characters.
Yeah. No, you're right. Women typically are portrayed in the holidays as like lovely and wonderful
and angels and
angels
stuff like
and,
that.
And, you know, grandmas, you know.
Kind of thing. True.
Because like Mrs. Claus is a grandma for all intents and purposes.
Right. But there's not like, you know, Mrs. Krampus, you know?
Right. No, totally.
Yeah.
You're right.
So, because this is wonderful, we actually have Frau Perchta, and it isn't as well known, obviously, because I hadn't heard of her before this, but she's actually a staple in the Alpine regions of southern Germany and Austria, but relatively under the radar still in North America, which is why I'm telling you all now. She is also known as just Berchta or Bertha, which is great.
Bertha.
And has also been called, and I apologize for the pronunciation with this one, Spinnstubenfrau, which literally just means spinning room lady, and that's horrifying to me anyway. She often is depicted with a beaked nose made of iron, random, dressed in rags, perhaps carrying a cane, and generally resembles a decrepit old crone. So again, we're actually in the grandma territory, I guess. The haunted grandma.
Oh, God.
This old crone packs a mighty wallop, apparently, and carries a long knife that she hides under her skirts for funsies.
Hot tips, ladies. Street smarts.
Street smarts. Always carry your giant knife in your skirt.
That's right.
She also will bear a resemblance to the Scandinavian Scandinavian goddess Frigga. Mm-hmm. So if you know what she looks like, she sometimes resembles her as well. But I don't think Frigga is very crone-like, but maybe I'm wrong. But both of them do share a common obsession. Spinning specifically and domesticated neatness generally. I don't know.
Okay.
She's pretty judgy about the state of your home for a woman who's dressed in rags. She also has a legend where you'd better get all your flax spun. So this isn't a woman spinning in a room, by the way. We're talking about like...
spinning yarn?
Right. Material. Okay. So like flax.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if your room and your home is a mess and you don't have all of your flax spun by the 12th night, which is January 6th, you will be in big trouble.
First of all, how dare you?
Right. First of all, get your stuff together. Okay. It's very lazy of you. Quote, for when the Christmas season was over, it would be time to set up the big upright loom, which is what you spin on, at which time you would have enough thread to wrap it and start your weaving, because the loom is how you would make your rugs and ponchos and whatever else that they wore. So basically, she's saying, don't be lazy, finish your weaving and chop chop. That's what she's for.
Seems reasonable. All right.
I think so.
Yeah.
And if you should really irritate her, like say, not only is your flax not spun and your house is a total mess and you've failed to leave out a traditional bowl of porridge for her because she's angry, her rampaging would extend far beyond your spinning room. She'll do nothing less than steal into your bedroom and with her giant knife in her skirts, disembowel you and replace your guts with rocks and straw.
Oh, I don't like that. Thank
Get your spinning done, ladies. That's all I'm saying.
Mm.
Another one of her names is Holly, a winter goddess whose name means shining or bright, which is hilarious given what
shine
she...
shine bright like a diamond.
Shine bright like a knife in your skirts. I don't understand. Hence her association actually with the Epiphany or the shining night on which the Star of Bethlehem shone, if you know the Christian story there. Her dual nature is expressed in the fact that there are both evil or ugly Perchin and pretty Perchin, both of whom you might find in these alpine regions of Europe. So yeah, there's lots of other legends. She apparently will also fly through the night sky, attended by an army of lost souls. She has an army of servants who are visually nearly indistinguishable from our Krampus demonic kind of looks.
Cute.
You know, it's fine.
Yeah.
Which I guess witchy vibes is really what she's got going on.
I like it. I think she's just misunderstood.
Okay. I'll tell my disemboweled body about that later. Something else that's super fun is Mary Loud, I think it's Loud, and the origins of Mary is that she is a horse, kind of.
Okay.
And very mysterious as
cool.
such. One Welsh translation of it is actually gray mare, which is where the horse comes from, and connects it to pale horses, specifically in the Celtic and British mythology, many of whom can cross over to the underworld, which is specific to her lore. The other translation, however, is Grey Mary, which is why she is a she. And some scholars have linked her specifically to a legend connected to the nativity story. A pregnant horse sent out to the stables when Mary, who gave birth to Jesus, she spent dark days roaming the land, trying to find somewhere new to have a foal. And many Mary fans, because it's spelled Mary or
Right.
Mari,
Right.
believe the character to have come from pre-Christian pagan origins. Obviously impossible to prove. So it's like Mary gave birth to Jesus and then Mary Lude gave birth to the foal. Similar meshings of stories there.
Okay.
Apparently. Mary is taken around a village traditionally, often between Christmas Day and Twelfth Night, which again is January 6th. She is dressed with festive lights and decorations and is usually accompanied by an ostler, and in some regions in the Swansea Valleys, other folk characters like a jester and a lady. This brings the tradition closer together with mummers' plays, which is a tradition of performances by the working class in the 18th century. And when the groups get to a house, they sing Welsh language songs or wassails, or even more traditionally, indulge in a ritual called pinco, which is an exchange of rude rhymes with the person who lives there. So they come to your doorstep, insult you, and then go on their merry way.
Right.
Which is very fun.
Seems
Very
good.
festive. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to look at pictures of her, it's very fun because it's basically like a horse skull shrouded in veils and different
Oh.
fabric. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the fabric is usually very colorful or has colored prints on it. So feel free to look it up. If Mari and her gang get entry into the household, it is said that you will have good luck for the year. She's also well known to be a little mischievous and try to steal things from your house and chase people that she likes, which is
Okay.
really random and fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first written record of Mary Lude is in the J. Evans book from 1800 called A Tour Through Part of North Wales. And although the tradition is best known for its practice in the Glamorgan and the Gwent, it has similarities to other hooded animals, such as in Britain, like the hooding in Kent, the broad in the Cotswolds, and the old tup in Derbyshire, which also involve a group of poor people trying to find food and money in the harsh depths of winter. Entertainment, very big here. A little bit of menace. You got a dead horse's skull appearing in your doorway. Kind of scary.
Yeah.
And then Welsh Methodists and other Christian nonconformists actually criticized Mary Lude, go figure, in the 19th century. The Blaenau Gwent-based Baptist minister, which is such a mouthful, Reverend William Roberts, called her, quote, sinful, which is very specific and pretty general.
Yeah.
In a 1852 book called The Religion of the Dark Ages, although he also transcribed 20 verses of Mari's performance. So
wow.
I kind of feel like you can't really call her sinful and then translate her performances. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird. Anyway, only a few of the possessions of Mary or Mari were left by the 1960s, including the Pencoed near Bridgend, and then a Penchurch near Cardiff. I don't know if I'm saying that right. She's a horse. I don't know. A Christmas horse. Very fun.
Yeah, Christmas horse is fine. That's festive.
Yeah. And yeah. So with all of that folklore, I will give you a break. And then when we get back, we'll get to talk about the Yule Cat.
Yay. We spend a lot of time joking about our mediocrity and how we can't believe people actually listen to our pods and join our lives.
Despite that, the truth is we are so thankful to have our little community, and we want to send our special thanks to all you MCP fam members for continuing to stick with us every episode. It does not go unnoticed.
It might be cheesy and a little cliche, but we truly want to thank you for listening to our pods and engaging with our content as we slowly grow our platforms.
So from us over here at Mediocre Content Podcast,
thank you. Now, enough of this mushy stuff. Let's get back to the pod.
Welcome back. Now that we get to talk about the Yule Cat, we have cats, which is
yes.
great.
Yes, look at this one. He's playing dead on the floor. And your mic just went out. That's fun. Okay, well, now it's the Blair Show, so
it's
everybody
so annoying.
Oh, she's back.
I don't
everybody
know why
quiet down. It's fine.
I don't know why it's doing. I'm literally gonna have to go back there after this. It's been doing like this for a very long time.
It is what it is.
That's why you don't come here for professionalism. You just come
That's
here for
right.
entertainment.
Right. You come here for the bare minimum.
So that's what you get. Okay. Gryla
Okay.
and La Paludi and their Yule Cat.
La Paludi and the Yule Cat.
They are both trolls, specifically cannibal trolls. And of course, like most trolls do, they prey on children,
Cute.
but they also do not mind eating fully grown men as well, specifically, which is great. Badly behaved children were scared by Gryla when they were growing up. The figures are depicted as living together as a family in a cave with their little kitty cat. Specifically, Gryla is considered an ogress or troll with an appetite for flesh of mischievous children. I don't like the word flesh, whom she cooks in a large pot. Her husband, La Paludi, is lazy and mostly stays at home in their cave. Okay.
Okay.
The Yule Cat is a huge, vicious cat that lurks about the snowy countryside during Christmas time or Yule time. And also eats people who have not received any new clothes to wear before Christmas Eve, which is so random and so
That
specific.
is random.
Apparently, these trolls also have sons called the Yule Lads, which is very, very cute. Specifically, they are 13 Yule Lads who are mischievous pranksters that steal from or harass the population generally, and all have descriptive names that, of course, will convey their favorite way of harassing you.
Cute.
They come to town one by one during the last 13 nights before Yule, which is why there are 13 of them. Instead of 12 days of Christmas, there's 13. They leave small gifts and shoes that children have placed on windowsills.
Yes.
Yes. But if the child has been naughty, they instead will provide you a rotten potato.
I
Just,
think that's reasonable.
I think that's reasonable.
Yeah.
These Christmas-related folktales first appeared around the 17th century and displayed some variation based on the region and age, as many of them will do. In modern times, these characters have taken on slightly more benevolent roles, actually. And the first mention of the Yule Lads can be found also in the 17th century with a poem of Gryla. Gryla had appeared in older tales as the troll, but had not been linked to Christmas prior, and she is described again as that hideous being who is the mother of these gigantic Yule Lads that are menaces to the children.
Pause. I'm looking up
Yes.
pictures of the Yule Cat.
Yes.
And can we talk about how it looks almost exactly like Salem?
It does, in fact, does it not?
It does. And
He's a
I'm obsessed with
very,
this.
he's just a fluffy little boy, you know?
It's just a fluffy little boy. He's a black cat.
Yeah.
Fluffy.
Yeah.
I love
Prowling
it.
around,
Obsessed.
eating mischievous children. It's fine.
All
Yeah.
right. Well, now I need to keep an eye on him. But anyway,
Now
continue.
I have tat.
Silenced once again.
Always. They were used to frighten children into good behavior, similar to the boogeyman. The King of Denmark objected to their use as a disciplinary tool, actually. And in the late 18th century, a poem mentions the 13 of them. In the 19th century, there was an author that drew inspiration from the Brothers Grimm and began collecting these folk tales.
Sure.
His 1862 collection is the first mention of the names Yule Lads. And in the 1932 poem, The Yule Lads was published as part of the popular poetry book Christmas is Coming by Icelandic poet Jóhannes Kötlum. So that's great. And that is them. They don't really talk a whole lot about the cat outside of that, which is really unfortunate, but at least you
That
know
is
he's cute.
unfortunate. Yeah.
Our next I don't even entity is La Befana. On January 5th, so just before the 12th night, throughout Italy specifically, excited children will prepare for their late night visit from La Befana by hanging up socks, stockings, to be filled with little treats and joys. Befana is a grandmotherly woman who does resemble a kindly witch and will bring these gifts to the good little children, putting them in their little socks that are hung above their hearth. Stockings. Then she will tidy up a little bit and leave. social, even clean your house.
This woman sounds amazing. I love her.
Just having like your mom or grandma come home and she's like, I got it. Mufana does arrive after children have gone to bed, of course.
Naturally.
The naughty children will get chunks of coal, onion, and garlic, or even straw from her broom instead of the rewards.
Okay.
The specific, I guess, Eve, unlike Christmas Eve here, is called Feast of Epiphany, which is the celebration and of the visit of the three kings or the magi in Christian time. So like, again, Child of Bethlehem, they go to Jesus, they give him frankincense, myrrh, and gold. That's kind of where she fits into all of this. And it's thought that her name actually derives from the word Epiphania, so La Befana.
Oh, interesting.
So Epiphany. Mm-hmm. And another theory posts that an important figure from Italian folklore is a Christian version of an earlier Roman goddess, Sabine, or Strinia, or Bastrina. And while the ancient goddess connection is probably accurate, Befana has been transformed through the ages, slightly more likely towards her ancient Roman origins. The medieval figure conceived of the 13th century Rome is very similar to Befana, which is why it's like that. And Lynx is deciding to block the entire computer. Hi, Bubba.
Great. Great.
Hello. Can you duck your body just a little bit, please? As Befana enters the houses through the chimneys, Santa Claus, or resorts to other top secret techniques for getting into your home without a fireplace, she wears a distinctive dark shawl caked with layers of chimney soot. And it's also said that she will sleep your floors and just kind of out with the old, in with the new is basically why they say that she is cleaning your house before she leaves.
Yeah. Okay.
So all of that is to say she's the closest thing we have to Santa Claus in modern times, in my opinion, because it's kind of similar in how they treat the homes and the children and what you get.
Cool.
And then our final little spooky, scary guy before my mic decides to trip out again is Hans Trapp. I feel like I'm trapped with this microphone. He is initially known as Hans von Trotha and was a German knight and marshal of the Prince Elector of the Palatinate. Born around 1450, which is a pretty long time ago, he wielded power and influence, commanding two castles and earning the French honorary title of Chevalier d'Or. I don't know what that means, but he won it.
The two castles. I mean, that's pretty big.
I don't own two castles, so. The strife that unfolded, however, between von Trotha and the church led to his excommunication. And it kind of mirrors what's considered the power struggles and conflicts of the time. It was a tale of defiance, revenge, and most notably, a damming of the Weisslotter River that left the downstream town of Weissenberg without water. Unfortunate. Such actions, though not as gruesome as the legend suggests, undoubtedly left a lasting impression on the local populace. The association of Hans Trapp with the Black Knight, a formidable specter, sometimes linked to Santa Claus in local legends, reflects a blending of reality and myth, as most, I would say, legends do, in a way. They're meant to tell a story, after all. Von Trotha's towering stature and defiance against both the church and the emperor of the time added layers to his persona, contributing to the creation of a figure that transcended his historical identity, which is why we have Hans Trapp. The local folklore in its evolution did transform Von Trotha into Hans Trapp, who ended up being a restless spirit haunting the Wasgau at night and even a character used to frighten children in Alsace. Legend says his thirst for power led him down a treacherous path, and he ended up making deals with the devil, which is probably not the best decision ever.
Not usually, no.
Not usually. Trapp, with his dreams of power shattered, retreated to the misty mountains of Bavaria in Germany. And here, in his makeshift home, he brooded, which is what you do when you're Sag, and his once human desires twisted into something darker and sinister. It was during his isolation he developed a taste for the forbidden human flesh, which I don't know. They all, I mean, if I was sitting in a dark room in mountains, maybe I would too. I don't know. He transformed into the Christmas scarecrow, draped in straw and waiting on desolate roads for unsuspecting victims. One fateful day, A young shepherd boy, innocent and tender, specifically, is what this article says, which is gross, crossed paths with the frightful figure. Trap, with a heart colder than the winter winds, stabbed the poor lad with a sharp stick, and then carried his body to his lair, sliced him into pieces, and then roasted him and ate him.
Yum.
Yeah. But lo and behold.
But lo.
I just had to do that because I felt that would be fun. Before he could feast upon this gruesome meal, divine lightning from the heavens struck him down violently. And his wicked spirit just kind of lingers haunting naughty children as a scarecrow. So.
Wow.
Wow. Very fun. So
in a stunning turn of events, the child wasn't eaten.
Yeah, he was just sliced to death.
Right.
And
yeah,
you know what's really unfortunate? At that point, just eat me. You just left me on the table. You got struck by lightning. And I kind of feel like it's a waste.
Totally. Absolutely.
So obviously the tales of Saint Nick and his wingmen vary.
Wingmen.
I mean, that's what the article called it, so I'm rolling with it. In some instances, Hans will appear to naughty children decked out in his petrifying scarecrow ensemble and attempts to scare them. In other versions, it isn't so remorseful from his past deeds, going so far as to mark the children he plans to eat for Christmas. But in all of these cases, realistically, it makes sense that they're all classified under the Tulpa cryptid, which is why it's still part of our cryptid series and why we talked about it. And they're all kind of applicable to this lovely Christmas and holiday season.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're more extreme compared to other methods of kind of telling children to behave, which I think is truthfully where a lot of liberties kind of go into these stories, because
it's true.
How do you handle unruly children back then? You tell them they're going to get eaten by a ghost scarecrow.
Seems
I don't know.
Reasonable.
Reasonable.
That would scare me.
Right? Of course, religion aside, can be really rough and scary out there. So just, you know, make sure your kids aren't just wandering around with reckless abandon, I guess. Unless you want one of the ogres to come find you. And I think that is also, you know, fun to explore. It's like Halloween, I guess, except instead of the kids dressing up to be scary, they are just being scared.
Yes, that's correct.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Yeah, we were going to put this in October, but you know how that went. So,
well, it's okay because it still kind of fits.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Fine. Who doesn't like spooks in December, you know?
Totes.
Anyway, thank you, microphone, for making it through this podcast. And it's all thanks to you.
Yes, indeed. And feel free to send us an email with any questions, comments, concerns, or episode topic suggestions at mediaconcertpodcast@gmail.com. If you are concerned about Kirsten's mic or decide you want to start a GoFundMe, feel free to do that. Just let us know about it first. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok, at least for the foreseeable future. And we'll see you guys next week on anywhere you listen to podcasts. Please rate us 5 stars. Bye.
This has been Mediocre Content.
Thanks so much for listening. Cheers.
Cheers.